I didn't know anything when it came to lead tracking, sales, operations, finance, accounting, all these things that you have to do as a business owner because you have to wear every single hat that exists. All I knew how to do was coach and buy equipment and put stuff together, I guess.
Welcome to the Barbend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by Barbend.com. Today, we have back on the podcast powerlifter, coach, and gym owner Zach Bartel. Now, this podcast is not a business podcast, but I do appreciate the opportunity to dive into the business ownership side and the gym ownership side of the fitness industry. And that's exactly what we do with Zach today. We talk about how he started SoCal Powerlifting, the challenges gym owners face, how he's built that community, and what it's like to build a powerlifting gym, a strength sports gym for and by powerlifters. It's a really interesting look at what goes on behind the scenes. A lot of things gym attendees and gym members like myself take for granted. Zach gives us insight to that. I hope you enjoy the episode. Zach, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. I've been on your podcast. Now you're coming back to Barbend. Not like you ever really went away, but you've been a busy guy. Tell us about your athletic background. Obviously, I was first introduced to you as a powerlifter, a coach. I want to talk more about the business of what you do a little bit later, but give us like the elevator pitch.
Yeah. So, my origin story was powerlifting. Before that, it was the football guy that loved the weight room. Fell in love with the weight room, lost 60 pounds when I was 16, getting into lifting weights, found powerlifting from there, competed in my first meet when I was 17, you know, back when it was just the USPA and the meets were, I met CT Fletcher at Metroflex at my first meet. So that was pretty interesting, and just fell in love with it, you know, fast forward, finished up playing sports in high school because I wasn't that athletic, and, kept the powerlifting train going, started training at Juggernaut Training Systems with Chad Wesley Smith over there from Juggernaut. And
what year was that about? Just to give us a sense, because like the Juggernaut, I remember, you know, there was a mid 2010s when they were it. They were kind of the only game in town producing the content online. So what year was that?
Yeah, so this was 2017. 2014 was my first meet. 2017 was when I opened my gym. 2014. So yeah, Chad actually grew up in the same town I grew up in.
Oh, cool.
And so I knew of him through, you know, mutual connects of like football and things like that. He's a bit older than me, but yeah, so this was 2015. I started working for Chad over at Juggernaut, and I started going to college as well. And that was when Chad and Max were working together on especially like blowing up the weightlifting a lot more. You know, Colin was training there. Anthony Poponio was training there. So some of the bigger names, and it was this strength haven. And meanwhile, I was 18 at the time, and just enthralled what was going on. Chad ended, you know, he hired me. I was working the front desk. I was working for Iron Rebel as well at the time. A few years later, I think Chad realized obviously the online business could be much, much bigger and went all in. And so he ended up closing his facility. And that's when I started mine.
Okay. Talk us through the competition schedule or competition lifestyle at that time, because right around, you know, between 2014 and 2017, I view that as a time when kind of the old school style of powerlifting, which is where there were many more equipped meets than quote unquote classic or raw meets. We were just starting to see that transition over to classic power, quote unquote classic powerlifting. Still a lot of federation tension. That's not gone anywhere. That still exists. Take us through that environment, because powerlifting, as it's gone more online, has certainly evolved a lot and grown probably exponentially since then.
Yeah. So when I started, I want to say it was my first meet was 2014. I was 17 years old. When I started, it was shifting back towards knee wraps and knee sleeves, still a lot of knee wraps. So in powerlifting, classic raw is knee wraps. Raw is like knee sleeves, you know, wrist wraps, all that stuff. You still saw some equipped lifters at meets. There was still some of that. And you saw a lot of old school folks. So like when you went to the powerlifting meet back then, it was a lot of older guys, you know, big, burly chested, hairy dudes, lifting some big weights and stuff. And obviously now it's completely changed. The landscape's a lot different. So the shift really, really started, I would say, when more federations started to adopt drug testing, actually, in powerlifting, because you had a lot of people who USSAPL at the time was the only federation that was drug testing. Once the USPA adopted it, you saw a lot of people come out of the woodwork and start to really try it. I think a lot of people, they were afraid to step in the ring with powerlifting because they were like, I'm never going to beat someone on drugs. Not that everyone was on drugs, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, it just made it more, I think, more accessible to a lot more folks. And this is also the time that obviously social media has been a huge play. Me and you, we've talked about CrossFit before and what that's done for strength sports. There's a lot of people that maybe they got a start in CrossFit or they found the weight room like me in high school and they loved lifting weights, the bench press and the squat and the deadlift. And they found that they were pretty good at it. And of course, as humans, we want to do the things we're good at, and they stuck with it. So I'd say that's how the sports really changed over. At that time, I started seeing the changing of the guard from the old school lifter to some of these new school people. And now it's changed even more. My team and I, we joke, you know, kind of about the Gen Z lifter. But the Gen Z lifter has done a lot for powerlifting. There's a lot of social media famous, TikTok famous Gen Z lifters that with all their equipments and their carpets and stuff. And now I feel like the old school guy, but it's a growing sport. And at that time, it was really starting to hit its stride.
If you could take one thing from an older stage of powerlifting, and by older stage, I mean like 9 years ago, if you could take one thing from an older phase of powerlifting and kind of apply it to today, what would it be? And the other question is, you know, what about powerlifting has changed that you really like?
Here's what we see. And we see this because we have over 500 clients we work with. The younger lifter wants it all right now. You know, they're thinking, I'm a teen, I'm a junior, I'm in the subcategory where this is my time to be a world champion. I have to get as much as I can done right now. And they think they need to train super specifically. So we're talking comp specific. They want SBD days. They want a lot of heavy singles. They want to do work that isn't necessarily conducive to their long-term growth and potential as a lifter. And even just building muscle mass and GPP and some of these other things that we need to do to stay in the game. And so just to train hard, to push your accessories, to do the bodybuilding work on top of your comp specific work, that would be the biggest thing. What I like about the new wave, the Gen Z lifter, is they're really passionate. They are so in it. And maybe it's a younger person thing. You know, when we're young, I think we let a lot of sports and hobbies shape who we are. It becomes who we are. And I was that way. But I find that especially in social media where we're at in today's day and age, where it's just so easy to share and post and get things out, those Gen Z lifters are doing a lot of legwork for the sport by getting younger folks, all types of folks into the sport because they're so in love with it. And so I love the passion and the fire that they have.
Yeah, the youngins are bringing the heat. You gotta admit that. And they're also bringing some weird camera angles, not going to lie.
Yeah, and carpets. They bring carpets now.
And carpets. Yeah, what's up with the carpet? Okay, let's talk about that for just a second.
Okay.
Explain what you mean for those who don't imagine, because I know exactly what you're talking about. What do you mean by the carpets?
Okay, so in powerlifting, you compete on a platform that is covered by a carpet because, I think the reasoning is the carpet allows for a little bit more traction. And it's also an easy way probably for federations to be like, everyone competes on the same surface. That's probably exactly.
Yeah, it very much standardizes it, right? So it's not like real plywood versus vinyl versus veneer. It's like, yeah, not vinyl, but veneer. Sorry, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And so what I think happened was, again, some of these younger lifters are like, how do I get super comp specific? Well, one of the ways is to literally lift on a carpet when you're training. And so that's what we're seeing now is especially on the bench press, lifters will bring a carpet, they'll put it under their bench and they'll bench using the carpet. And I've never done it. I've heard it, you know, some of them say it gives you more traction with your feet and your leg drive in the bench press. As the older lifter, we kind of joke about it because again, back in my day, we didn't have access to comp specific equipment. I mean, I was lifting at my recreation center at college where like the bench rack heights were the preset ones where I would have to like tricep extension the bar out of the rack to then, you know, start my bench press set. So you're just seeing a lot of the comp specific stuff come into play. A lot of these younger lifters really want the same equipment they're going to use in the comp. They want it in their gym. And not every gym has that quite yet. But one of the things that the lifters can do is to bring their own carpets.
There's something, by the way, it sounds so curmudgeonly, because I agree with you. I'm like, what's up with the carpets? We're very curmudgeonly, because we're literally like, oh, these young kids with their carpet, with their pieces of carpet, they're bringing it to the gym. This isn't like young kids and their smartphones or their GoPros. We're literally like, oh yeah, they're just bringing these rugs in, and we sound so curmudgeonly right now.
It's I've seen some people bring in some stuffed animals they like to film with there's a guy that has a Snorlax that he films with, and maybe that's part of his brand, you know, maybe he's the Snorlax guy. But you know, it's these young kids, they're bringing their carpets in, and you know, at the end of the day, it's like, if carpets is that's the sin, if that's the worst thing, like,
amazing. Okay, Zach, I want to talk a little bit about you as a business owner, because I know something you're passionate about right now is you've built a really great community with SoCal Powerlifting. Take us through that. Like, how did that start? And in building a powerlifting gym and building a community, and you know, what were some of those hurdles? I know we could talk about hurdles for literally days.
Yeah, days. Yeah.
But like, let's narrow it down just a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, I opened my gym pretty young. I was 20 years old. I bought Chad's equipment from Juggernaut to start it. And one of the things that honestly helped me was how naive I was. I literally was like so young that failure for me was it just not working out. And I'd put, you know, some gym equipment in a storage unit and train myself. Right. So that was like my worst case scenario at the time. Obviously the implications could have been far worse, but what was hard is I didn't know anything about business. I think a lot of people with gyms, you feel like, if you build it, though, they will show up. And my empathy and ability to be genuine and authentic to people and coach is like was the biggest game changer for me starting the gym. I started the gym with the idea that it would be a coaching first facility.
What does that mean? Like, coaching first facility?
Yeah. So when people join, they're going to sign up for coaching. So the gym, actually one of my mentors was Max Ada, and he told me from the get-go, he said, the gym is an expense for coaching. When we started in 2017, I was selling coaching where you also got access to my gym. Because in markets like SoCal or New York or these metropolitan areas that are expensive, it is really hard to make a profitable gym business in very expensive areas, especially if your client value is $80 a month for gym access or $100 a month. You have to find other ways to increase client value. And again, I didn't know all these things back then, but it was almost this blind luck of, okay, well, I want to make this a coaching-based facility. So I still had some open gym and stuff, but really it was coaching. And then from there, it was just my passion. You know, I was the young, passionate lifter that wanted to preach the gospel of powerlifting and get people in and get them to compete. And what I really focused on from the communal aspect was this idea of anyone's welcome, inclusivity. This isn't just old school powerlifting where it's a certain demographic. This is anyone from any background, any orientation can come in, train. We're all treated, you know, the same, and can be true to who we are while simultaneously making each other better and focusing on getting stronger and, you know, having this goal that unites us. And that was really the mantra from the beginning as I started out. As time goes on, you know, what my realization was, as I needed to get bigger, I'd have to build to scale and start to learn business. So what I really focused on then was my business knowledge, hiring a business coach, taking some classes and courses. And I started just to implement things that would allow me to grow and scale. And we've been able to move three times and expand into new facilities. We're looking to do it a fourth time here now when something pops up. And so I would say the hardest part, though, with the community side of things has been keeping the small feel as you get bigger. Because we're over 500, you know, clients and members now.
Wow.
COVID was a huge hurdle for us, and we actually did okay. We were able to stay open. But one of the things we lost during COVID was the ability to have the community keep building via community events, meets, and things like that. And so what I've been battling now is in today's climate where we have all these members and all the staff and stuff, how do we keep the small feel? So we still try to do community events, group events, meets, but one of my biggest issues that we're having to deal with is how do I implement, you know, smaller scale feel type events and things like that to a group of 500. Because back in the day, we could just all be like, hey, let's go to a brewery, let's go play, you know, we'll go do laser tag. It's like 25 of us. But now 25, you know, doesn't even represent like 5% of the member base. And so it's just very difficult to do some of these things. And so we're still dealing with that. I don't have the answer.
One of the first activities we did when Barbin had full-time employees was group laser tag. And let me tell you, power lifters are really bad at laser tag because they're slow moving targets and they're wide targets. Laser tag is not built for people who are wide enough to stick out from all the corners.
Yeah.
You can pick them off like crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it was those times, you know, that kind of golden era, that first few years of when we were really small, super bootstrapped, were some of the best times. I'm sure you can relate with the Barbend days. Those early days are something to cherish, right? And that's what's hard with growing a business is there are things that you have to grow out of to get to the next level. And hopefully getting to the next level is like a net positive, which it obviously has been for us. But at the same time, you know, there's things that you do miss that are hard to keep as you grow.
Yeah, for sure. What are a few things that you would do differently if you could start and go through the first, you know, call it 5 years of that gym ownership process again?
It's a great question. So I did a lot of things right.
That's good. I'm going to ask about we can ask about those in a second, but the hard question first here.
Yeah. So I did a lot of things right. One of the things that I wish I would have done, and this is more of a business sort of tactic kind of thing, would have been I offloaded some responsibilities too quickly. So my idea was I will keep, you know, we're going to keep growing this business. I'm going to keep taking on more duties that help us grow, and I'm going to keep offloading duties I have. And one of the things I let go of early was the sales side and consultations with new people. As soon as I stopped taking consultations with new people and offloaded that to someone else who was amazing at it, I stopped learning my clients' names. I stopped getting to know everyone coming in. And for me, that was really, really difficult because the only way I would be able to meet someone is if I just go introduce myself on the floor, which I do and could do. But it was really cool to be able to have that first touch point in person with our new members. And I wish I would have held on to that longer. I think it would have helped the business grow even quicker probably. And for me to still stay in that community a little bit more, a little bit longer, especially because I had stopped competing in powerlifting in 2017 was my last full power meet. 2019 was my last push-pull meet. I've had like reconstructive knee surgery. And so I've had to sort of remove myself a bit just because I'm not powerlifter, you know, anymore. I mean, it's been tough. So, but letting go of that the sales role early was something I wish I would have held on to longer.
What are some things you did right that you're just like, you look back on, you're like, that was the right move?
Hired a business coach.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, even talking revenue numbers. So I started in 2017. Our first year, we did about six figures. I hired my first business coach. We had hit a 10K month. It was just me. I think I had one other staff member at the time, maybe doing some coaching at the time. I can't remember. But I didn't know anything when it came to lead tracking, sales, operations, finance, accounting, all these things that you have to do as a business owner because you have to wear every single hat that exists. All I knew how to do was coach and buy equipment and put stuff together, I guess, was where I was valued at the time.
Which counts for a lot. Being able to assemble equipment counts for a lot.
Yeah. And time, my effort, energy, all those things, all the soft stuff, the intangibles. But I hired a business coach. It was a recommendation from another gym that we were actually subleasing from at the time. They were working with the same coaching company, and I hired my first coach, and she really opened my eyes to the benefit and the necessity of understanding your numbers and accounting, and even on the sales side, follow-ups and tracking leads. I remember specifically her telling me to like start tracking our leads that were coming in with all their contact info. And I was like, what are you talking about? I have it all on my phone. I just put their name and gym lead next to it. And I know that they're a gym lead, but obviously you have to systemize. And that's the biggest, if I have one piece of advice to anyone that either is running a gym or wants to open a gym, it's all about systems. And the same goes for all business, but the more you can automate, the more systems we can put into place, first of all, the better you're going to feel, less overwhelmed, and the easier it'll be to grow and teach others even within the business too. And so that was the biggest game changer. I think the other thing that I did really well was hiring. I have an amazing team now, and I'm so freaking grateful for every single one of them. I would spend a lot of time onboarding new staff, new coaches, and doing a long, thorough internship process before bringing anybody on, because I cared about the product and still care about the product so very much. It was really important to me that they were also, you know, they also cared about our mission and what we do and what we stand for and who we are. And so that's been another thing that, you know, I have very low staff turnover over the last almost 6 years now, super low turnover. So that's been something we've done really well.
How big is your staff right now? You have about 500 members. How big is your staff?
We have about 10.
Okay. How is that split up? Is it all trainers? Is it?
Yeah. So what's cool with the model we've created is everyone coaches.
Okay.
Except me. I haven't coached since 2020, 2019-ish. So everyone has a roster of clients. So for example, even Alex Gaynor, our general manager, he has the most duties to run that. He runs the facility for the most part, and he still has a roster of about 20 clients. Mind you, it's the same 20. He hasn't gotten a new client in 2 years. They stay because they love him. And so I have some that are full-time coaches that have full rosters. And then we have some part-time coaches that they also have other jobs, or they coach and do, you know, social media or marketing or other things in the business. It works really well because, one, it's a great income opportunity for a staff member who, I'm sure any small business owner listening to this, even yourself, you could probably relate. It's like, there's only a certain amount of things you can pay people for. And so when someone is also a service provider, it allows them to make more income. And then you can give them even more opportunities on top of that by diversifying and giving them stuff to do. And so most of them, all of them have clients, but then they have other duties. Some of them have other duties outside of the clients to either run the facility, run the marketing, or they just even just coach part-time and even maybe have another job as well, but this is their passion.
Got it. What kind of feedback have you gotten from some of your early members as the gym has grown? We talked earlier about the challenges of keeping that small community feel. But you know, those are the clients who've been with you, the members who've been with you for a long time. They've seen how things change. They've seen things improve. They've probably seen some things that they didn't love changing because, you know, look, I've been a member of a lot of different gyms in my time, been a gym co-owner. And sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, I kind of liked things the way they were, right? And new things happen. Hey, getting new equipment is great, but suddenly the gym's busier too, right? So what are some of the feedback that you've heard from those early members?
Yeah, so for a long time, it was really all positive stuff. I think they were super proud of my journey, of the gym's journey, and it was really good. At this size, it's definitely been more difficult because as you grow, you're also going to get members that maybe don't care as much about the facility as they do. I mean, these long-term members care. Like this is part of their deal, you know? And so what the complaints I've gotten and definitely seen now are more so, hey, like these members are leaving chalk everywhere or they leave their stuff out. They don't take ownership of the facility. Those are the ones I get from what I call my legacy members. But I cherish that feedback because there's not a lot of people that'll look you in the eye and tell you what you're doing wrong. In business, like when you're the guy, like even your staff, you know, not a lot of people will tell you things as they are, and your legacy folks, they will. They're not my long-term members are not afraid to you know, say what they think. And I also really truly care about what they think and what they feel. If I could just have 500 of them, it would be amazing. So how do you get more of your favorite customer? You ask your customer, you know, what they think and what they want to see. And so I do think, it has been tough. I think they love that. Obviously, we have so much more fun stuff and fun equipment, and it's a bigger size. But there's definitely been a lot more people that are new. They're new to powerlifting that don't understand maybe the etiquette. And then you have those people that have been around feeling a little bit like, oh, it's now this is overrun. I'm the minority now, you know, because it's a lot of new people in the door.
What is the breakdown of membership as far as like how they find the gym? Paid advertising versus word of mouth versus people finding you organically because they're Googling for, you know, powerlifting in their area, things like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's paid advertising. So we don't do any paid social, but we do paid Google ads. And that's been huge for us. We have really high conversion rates there, very low cost per click, very, very healthy. We do have high referral rates, referral bonuses for members as well. Referral clients are the best clients because they're friends of your favorite clients. And so that's been one that I'm always trying to push referrals as much as possible. And then we do some corporate engagement. For example, we have a deal with Rivian. Rivian has a warehouse near us where they have a ton of employees. And so we have five Rivian employees, that have started training with us. And so we try to reach out to some corporations that are nearby. We're in Irvine, so we're near a lot of some bigger corporations, and those clients are amazing. And so, yeah, it's definitely a mixture. Our social media has also been growing a lot. We've been trying to do the right 1-2 punch combo of fun, funny type real stuff while also doing informative things. We don't really advertise a ton, but we've been seeing some conversions coming through there. For our online coaching, probably all been Instagram Google ads for sure. But for the in-person stuff, there's probably a little bit more that comes in organically. Like we have, I think 300 plus five-star Google reviews. We've got 150 plus five-star Yelp reviews. So those two platforms do amazing for us as well.
Awesome. Zach, where is the best place for people to follow along with you, to follow along with the gym, the community, all that good stuff? This is the time to plug.
Yeah, hey, absolutely. So first of all, for me, I'm at Bartel Barbell, spelled how it sounds, on Instagram. We got SoCal Powerlifting at @SoCal_powerlifting on Instagram as well, if you want to follow the gym. You know, if you're a gym owner, you're also looking for some tips and tactics. I started a company called Gym Growth Tactics at Gym Growth Tactics on Instagram too. You can follow along there. I've just dropped my own podcast. David, your episode's going to be on there pretty quickly here. So that's where you can find me. All stuff gym, all stuff business. Love to chat about it.
Awesome. Zach, it's always a pleasure, man. I'm sure we'll do this again sometime in the near future. Really appreciate your time today.
Dude, thank you so much, David. Thank you.